This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Do you feel well-fed by your social media feed? Food imagery, both amateur and staged, has taken over the internet. And for good reason, I suppose. Food photography toes the line between depiction and deception. A good picture can translate all the emotions of a good meal with none of the calories or the physical satisfaction. So what happens when you flip the script and you start with emotions and use the food as a tool of expression? That's the question at the heart of Donraj Emanuel's new exhibit, now on view at Revolution Mill in Greensboro. Donraj Emanuel is a Greensboro food photographer and an instructor at Randolph Community College, and he joins us now. Donraj Emanuel, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Frank.
How did you get started in, I want to talk about your exhibit, but how did you get started in food photography?
Well, when I came to the United States in 1999 to go to graduate school, I started cooking for myself. I had to cook for myself. I got tired of eating burgers and eating outside fast food. And so I started cooking, and I had no experience in the kitchen. And so I started cooking from memory. And my way of cooking was to throw some spices in and work on it until it smelled right. Mm-hmm. And that transported me home. And so that's why I started cooking. And at that time, I moved alone. I had no friends here. And cooking was a really great way to meet people. And so I would cook and have people over. And it was so easy to connect with somebody over food. And that's when I fell in love with food. And that's why I started photographing food. If I had to like baseball, I'd photograph baseball.
So, I mean, stay with what you know. And at that moment, you knew food, and you come from a long line of photographers, it turns out.
That's right. So my great-great-grandfather was a photographer. My grandfather was a photographer. My father, and myself, and my uncle, who's still alive in India, he's a photographer, and my cousin's a photographer. So I come from a family of photographers, but I did go to school in India for photography. I studied at, I got my BFA in photography, and then I photographed for a while. I did commercial photography for about 8 years. It was fairly successful. I had a studio and everything. But I felt that there was something missing and I needed something more, and I came to art school.
Talk about this exhibit of yours now that's on view.
Well, this exhibit on view at Central Gallery at Revolution Mill is titled Reclaiming. And this exhibit is primarily about loss and navigating through grief. And the more I thought about it, the more it seems I had to admit to myself that I was thinking about what it means to grieve as a man, really. And I think that was what I was thinking about. And for me, it is to keep things to oneself and not to express certain emotions, because it can be seen as emasculating to admit to certain feelings of loss and grief. And I use photography to channel all of that. And I worked on this series that, where I expressed these thoughts for myself. It was a therapeutic process for me.
And the loss you were experiencing was a marriage and a father in the same month.
In a span of a few months, mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. And so it felt like the bottom dropped out. And I was like, how do I make sense of this? And of course, I turned to photography to do it. And since I am a food photographer, I see that as my medium. I decided to use food to express these, to make these photographs. And at the same time, I was playing with this idea of making drawings out of cocoa, and I call them cocoa drawings. I love charcoals, but I don't draw. And I was like, I'm going to use pigment, cocoa pigment, to make some drawings, abstracts, and photograph them. Although those abstracts are beautiful, they somehow didn't do it for me. I never did show it to anybody. And when it came to expressing these ideas, I thought maybe I should use these abstracts, this methodology, this way of putting pigment on plexiglass and photographing that. Maybe I'll use that. And I walked out of a design class. I just gave a lecture on elements and principles of design. I walked out of that class and it just became clear to me, I am going to use a line as kind of a visual framework, as a design framework for this project. And that's how it all came together. So there are several layers to this project. There is content, which came from the way I was feeling. And then there is aesthetic, which came from, the pigments and all that kind of stuff, powders that I'm using. And there was very strong influence of my design teaching, which came by way of design.
So let's describe one or two of these for us, one of the photographs, and talk about how they worked and what the powders are. You're using various spices and ground material?
I'm using various spices. For Some for color, some for, what the spice inherently does. So one of the images that are my favorite, that is my favorite in the show, is the image of a straight line with a break in it. And that was the first image I made. And when I was working on this series, I didn't know it would work or what was possible. I just started. And I wanted to express this idea of the bottom falling out. And I decided I was going to use line as my design element for this project. And so it just came to me that I'm going to draw a line and I'm going to create a break in this line. And that really signified the bottom falling out. But also this line sits in the middle of the frame. It kind of divides the frame into two equal halves, you know. And so that's it. And I use sweet paprika for this because this was a sweet but spicy experience in some way. And I don't think it's all or nothing. Loss is never all sad or all happy, but it's a mix of the two. And so I think paprika was the perfect kind of spice to use to express this idea.
So you talked about the design aesthetic as something that's essential to this particular series that you're working on. But what about the photography aesthetic itself? How is it different when you take a photograph, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of other step of mediation between that and, let's say, somehow, attaching, right, the paprika to a canvas or some other way of showing the texture. What happens when you make it a photograph, and how does that change things for you artistically?
That's right. So one of my main reasons to make a photograph is because I'm a photographer and because I'm comfortable with the medium, right? But at the same time, when I put something down on this board and I photograph it, it exists only for the camera, and it's gone after the camera has gone away. What you see is a representation, a simulacrum, so to speak, of what was there. And that to me is interesting because the process for me is when I make these photographs, I'm questioning the way I feel, I'm questioning various ways of why I feel this way, how I got here, and how, and I make sense of things. But after I make the photograph, it's gone. It's almost like going for cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, when you write down these things and it's gone after that. And I like that the photograph also is gone, that the real thing is gone. And what you have is just a simulacrum or a representation of what was there.
So the event has passed, but the representation can remain in memory as an artifact that you created. I want to hear more about food photography, too, and the sort of the commercial process. Mm-hmm. And then we talk more about your exhibit and how all these things came together. But talk about taking pictures of food, because you've been doing that for a while, right? Mm-hmm. And because I've always been struck by the fact that when I see pictures of fast food, for instance, I look at that and I say, that doesn't look appetizing to me. So it means that somehow, and believe me, these folks know what they're doing. They're getting their money's worth out of this.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's working on somebody. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, we've been conditioned to think that is food and that picture is going to make me want that thing if I've had it and I liked it. I mean, and I wonder how you work with that, the fact that somebody has to be conditioned to like that food before you know what you're looking for in a picture.
Correct. Well, this happens over time. For the longest time, through the 70s and 80s, we looked at fast food. Imagery has changed. We look at the way burgers and fries and other kinds of fast food have been kind of depicted, and we accept them for being like pristine and perfect and clean and almost like fake looking.
Yeah.
But in the late 90s, we started with the natural movement. We started thinking about natural, and the early into 2000s and mid-2000s, organic was full-blown. Okay, and we had clients who would ask us, okay, it's natural, it's organic, we have to use natural light to shoot it, let's not shoot it in the studio, and they demanded natural light, and so we started shooting things in natural light, and then we wanted to make it a little more like homemade and organic, and so it wasn't perfect, and now we've come to accept this imperfection as being okay. So in the studio, we create this like control chaos. We have crumbs and things like that, and we come to accept it.
Yeah.
So just as we came to accept this plasticky looking food before, we have come to accept food that's imperfect right now.
Talk about putting this all together. You know, I guess you'd think that I put Dunraj into a room with a camera and say whip up a few hamburgers and take some pictures. But there's a lot of people involved in creating the set.
That's right. It's always a team. It's a team effort. So I am the photographer and I make the pictures. So I'm responsible for lighting the set and taking pictures. But then it's the food stylist that really works on the recipe and cooks the food and makes it look appetizing and makes it look nice for camera. So we have the food stylist, you have me, and then you have, I have an assistant, and most times the food stylist has an assistant. And we also want to create a story. We want to create a happening. More and more now with social media, we want to create happenings. We want to create stories. People connect through stories. And to create, we create a story in the studio by use of, you know, the background, the plates, the spoons, and of course, light.
Yeah.
And so we have a prop stylist who decides what kind of plates to use.
You even have lawyers.
We have enough lawyers at times because, you know, when you go out and you look at, you know, a sandwich on a fast food, in a fast food restaurant, what you get is very different from what you see on the board there. But if you weigh them out,
there's a lawyer there saying, if we're going to say it's a quarter pounder, it can't be.
It has to be a quarter pounder, yeah. Wow. So in the photograph, although when you look at the photograph, it looks way bigger and juicier and things like that, it is still a quarter pounder. And the way the burger looks, I mean, that's the craft of the stylist and the photographer.
They really use hair curlers on curling irons to make the barbecue look on hamburgers.
Yep, that we still do, and that is still allowed. And you know,
that's great. Talk about, you've done some other really interesting photographs, and when you talked about the way our aesthetics and our expectations have changed around food, you did some work for a pizzeria, and I'd like you to talk about that and the images you created for them.
Yes, a few years back, I think this was 5 years back, a friend of mine, Paul Vinod, who lives in New Jersey, he called me wanting me to make pictures for a pizza restaurant called Scissors and Pie. And he wanted to do something different. I said, all right, we'll do something different. And we came up with various concepts and we were going to shoot. I was going to go to Boston to photograph pizza. This was about 3 weeks before the restaurant opened. But about 4 days before that, we learned that the ovens didn't arrive from Tuscany. And so we were like, from Naples, sorry. And so we were like, oh, what are we going to do? And we started brainstorming. And what seemed at that time like a problem really became the solution. And so I was like, hey, you want to do something different, right? Let's not shoot pizzas. Let's just shoot the ingredients. And since this restaurant photographs, serves pizzas in squares and they serve it by the weight, let's use some flour and create a square, a simulation, so to speak, of the pizza. And let's have dry ingredients on there. And I shot that entire project in my living room in Greensboro.
So you've got a square of flour on a plate and then...
On a board,
a board. And then you've got various ingredients like shrimp and the kinds of things you find. It's really fascinating photography. And at first they resisted, of course, because it doesn't look like a pizza, per se.
That's right.
But it was quite attractive. But it became their menu.
But it did become their menu. It went up on the menu board and, you know... We often think that you have to show the real thing so the customer knows what they're seeing. But I think that, you know, we have very sophisticated customers. There's no need to underestimate them, and they can put two and two together. And they want to be filled with a sense of wonder and to see something different.
So
it's not hard to do.
Not an hour goes by when somebody doesn't shoot you an egg that they're eating. The fried egg on Instagram is just... Why I'm not on Instagram, but what has that done? Because people cannot sit down to a meal now without taking a picture of their food and then assuming the rest of the world needs to see it. But what's that done to food photography?
Well, it's just added to the story, really. It's just made food photography become more accessible, but also it's made us professionals kind of make photographs that can stand out from the rest of the crowd in some way, but also it's made us change our aesthetic to kind of match that in some way, because what we were doing now is kind of making foods that are pristine. It's somehow suspect. It's been engineered for us to see, engineered to entice, so to speak, whereas what you see on Instagram is natural. It's happening. That it's authentic and it's real, and that really is the language of today: authenticity and immediacy and being real.
What you said just before that you had to find as a professional a way to stand out, but then now what you're saying is, but don't stand out. Make it look like,
No, we still stand out. I mean, this is where we like tread the line and make it stylistic enough to look professional, but controlled, chaotic enough to look not. I mean, and that's the difference, really. It's really an art now, and it's a fine line that we tread.
How do you take that when you were doing Reclaiming? Again, mm-hmm. this is a project that's trying to get at the emotion of grief and loss. Can you bring all of that kind of thinking as a professional into that the art project, or do you go to a different place to create that project?
That's a great question. I think I bring all of that to it, but the key difference between working on a personal project and working on a project for a client is the personal project happens primarily for me. The intent is to create the photographs for myself, whereas for a commercial client, you know, the work is made for the client and it goes out. And when I'm making work for a commercial client, it's important to me what the viewer thinks of it. But I'm working work for myself, it's not that important to me what the viewer thinks of it.
Did it help you through that process for you emotionally, the Reclaiming project?
Absolutely. There's something about writing down your thoughts and going through your thoughts and understanding where they're coming from. It's kind of freeing in a way, but it's nice at the end of it to have this beautiful piece, you know, that's melancholic, it's quiet, it's elegant, it's nice to look at, and, you know, it could beautify someone else's space.
Don Raj, thank you so much for being on the program today. Don Raj Emanuel's exhibit, Reclaiming, is showing at Revolution Mill in Greensboro. You can find links to the event and his work, in fact, at our website, stateofthings.org, our foodie Instagram, where we share pictures of Tupperware lunches and everybody's fried eggs. You can also sign up for our newsletter and get a daily preview of our lineup. By the way, you're just in time for the holiday season. Our next Embodied show is about diet culture. We want to hear from you. Has someone treated you differently because of the size or shape of your body? What kind of talk about diets is good or bad food, that sort of thing? What do you hear on a regular basis? What you should eat and what you shouldn't eat? Lots of free advice out there. What's your personal experience with diet culture? Email us at sot@wnc.org to share your stories for the next Embodied. And that's the State of Things for today, produced by Anita Rao, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Holub-Mormon. Robin Copley is our technical director. Jenny Lawson engineering the show today. Josie Tarr is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.